easiest one to discuss, but it is practical, applicable, and current. I think that if we looked at the audience and we all looked internally and looked at family members or friends or individuals that we know of in our workplace, all could probably say within one or two levels of existence that they experience a coworker, a family member, or someone that has been engaged in sexual immorality at some point in their life. So the topic itself has application throughout. Our audience tonight is a cross-section from older to younger. We'll have grandparents, we'll have parents, and we'll have children that are infants, and we have young people that are looking for spouses. So the cross-section is good from the standpoint of covering a topic and covering it from the standpoint of the way the Bible addresses it, so that we can talk openly to others about the situation and try and have amount of preventative action. The topic is one where the modern proverb is highly applicable. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Studying about it beforehand with our younger children, with our adolescents, with our teens, with our young adults, throughout, and openly talking about it so they understand clearly what the Bible has to say is important. In spite of modern opinion, fornication, and more broadly, we're just going to say sexual immorality is sinful for everyone. In 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 10, do not be deceived, neither the sexually immoral, nor adulterers, nor men who practice homosexuality will inherit the kingdom of God. There's no mincing with those words. I didn't make anything up there. It pretty clearly says it. And does it say they're going to heaven? No. The only way they can get to heaven is if they repent. Other passage similar to that is Galatians 5, 6, 19 through 21. Now the works of the flesh are evident, sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, orgies, things like these. I warn you, as I warned you before, those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. What does the modern media say today? Modern media says, you're all wet. That's not consistent. We don't believe that. You should accept people the way they are. I read an article on MSN on the way home, and it was, acceptance completely, just as I am. That's what our children are hearing. That's what our grandchildren are hearing. And that's what they grow up in as they go away to college and so on and get exposed to. It's important from that standpoint that we reiterate and emphasize as often as we can the importance behind this. And its nature, sexual immorality in itself, pulls at our basic instincts, but it is not insurmountable. Paul, in admonishing the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 6 and 11, said, "And such were some of you," meaning they had practiced their entire lives before coming Christians, potentially, acts of sexual immorality. We know from our studies in the days of idol worship that it was common practice as part of ritual fornication at the temples and so on. Prostitution was rampant. I can't say that it's any less rampant today than it was then, but you know, it's just in different forms in many cases. David, in spite of his sin with Bathsheba, was still considered to be a man after God's own heart. But that doesn't mean that he continued to live in his sin. He repented of his ways, tried to make restitution, and took the punishments for which he was given by God. Sexual immorality dates to the earliest of times. It's highly likely it was a motivator for the great flood. We know that when God said he destroyed the world as a result of the flood, every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Talking about mankind in general. As we go forward in time and looking at Genesis 16 and 15 and 16, the iniquity of the Amorites was not yet full. They were known for idol worship and ritual fornication. And this was why, at that time, Abraham did not possess the land, But yet when his people came back 400 years later after being in bondage in Egypt, they did destroy the Amorites. Genesis 19, Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed for this very wickedness. The allowance for polygamy under the old law did not come without permission or problems. I would say they were allowed under the old law to have multiple wives, but did it always work out well? I don't think it worked out real well for Jacob. And I think Abraham had a few problems associated with Hagar and Sarah. And you can look through that. It was not necessarily the best practice. I think it gave this writer of this book problems with his 1,000 wives and concubines. The entire codes of conduct are outlined under the old law regarding sexual immorality, whether it be in the form of incest, whether it be in the form of fornication, adultery, homosexuality. God took extensive time outlining his views on what his people should do under that law regarding it. You can hear a pin drop in here. Solomon addresses chapter 2 to my son in Proverbs. When he is talking to his son, so to speak, in Proverbs chapter 2, he gives him practical advice. He says in Proverbs 2, 16 through 18, you will be delivered from the forbidden woman. So you will be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death and her paths to the departed, and none go to her, come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. We could flip that passage around and look at the admonition that was given to the men of the day during Malachi when they forsook the wives of their youth. You know, in this particular passage, it's pointing at the woman here, and in that particular passage, it's pointing at the men doing the exact same thing. And the Bible treats it equally with respect to that. In this particular passage, there are several things I want to pick up on. The sin itself is enticing because of the smoothness. It says the smoothness of the words. The individual forgets who they are in the moment and forgets the covenant that they've made with God. Here, it's not so much that you commit the sin and you're dead, but it's you sink into a ritual or a behavior that makes it harder and harder for you to want to come back. We talk about other activities that are addicting, whether it be smokers that were addicted to smoking or drugs in some form. Sexual immorality in its basis form can be along those same lines, because it plays to our excitement, it plays to our emotions, it plays to our hormones and everything else that control and make us do things that we wouldn't necessarily do otherwise. Proverbs 5 and 4, for the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to the death, and her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. Again, it gives the idea of this is something enticing. This is something smooth. It presents it in the similar light to how Satan presented Eve with the idea that she would be wise like God and that she could enjoy the taste of this savory fruit. This particular passage makes the point in contrast that it may seem that way to begin with, but ultimately it leaves a bitter taste. Not only in the taste in the mouths of the ones that are participants, but in the mouths of those that are affected by it, whether it be family, friends, or associates. How many times have you been into something and you just didn't like it? Thought it was going to be really good. That's the idea presented behind this passage. Proverbs 6, 27 through 35. Can a man carry fire into his chest and his clothes not be burned? This is going to the idea, well, I'll just dabble with sexual immorality. It won't get me. Or can one walk on hot coals so he is not, so is he who goes in to his neighbor's wife. None who touches her will go unpunished. People do not dispose of a thief if he steals to satisfy the appetite when he is hungry, but if he is caught, he will pay sevenfold. He will give all the goods of his house. He who commits adultery lacks sense. He who does it destroys himself. He will get wounds and dishonor, and his disgrace will not be wiped away. For jealousy makes a man furious, and he will not spare when he takes revenge. He will accept no compensation. He will refuse, though you multiply gifts. Excuse me. Under the old law, if you stole something, what were you supposed to do? Just give it back. Or were you supposed to restore more than you gave back? You stole. More than you stole. Okay? In a case of a man taking another man's wife, how can you restore that? Couldn't. I mean, you've taken something so precious at that point, there's no way to make restitution for it. Making the point here that the emotions surrounding it, the attitudes surrounding it go so deep that the revenge surrounding it, which in that day would have been, what was the punishment for someone caught in the act of adultery? Stoning. For both parties, was it not? And the ones that were supposed to initiate that and track it down and have it handled would have been the family members. That's right. And if it was a situation where there was one that was unmarried, you know, they were to be married, and then they were potentially make restitution to the parents or whatever associated with that, the dowry associated with it. Sin of fornication separates, and this is as it relates to the idea of consequences associated with sexual immorality. Sin of fornication separates a person from God. Well, in general, sin separates us from God. I think there are certain sins that have such an enticement that they tend to pull us away and keep us away more readily than others. You know, it may be an instance where we sin in lying, but are we a habitual liar? Does it have a continual pull and draw on us? Sexual immorality has a continual pull and draw on the people participating in it. Galatians 5, 19 through 21. Those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God, making the point it separates us from God. Proverbs 15 and 3. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. Meaning that we can't be engaged in activities and God not know about it. Sin of fornication endangers the physical body. As we talk about the things that an individual is engaged in. He makes the points in Proverbs 5 and 11. You mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed. Now, in that day here, when it talks about destroying the physical body, there was no doubt the penalty of death associated with it. Now, we know the Jews didn't practice that with regularity. They were often involved in sexual immorality and did not exhibit the punishments presented in the old law. At least we don't have it recorded when they were heavily involved in idol worship. Sin of fornication damages emotions. I don't think there's any debate that we can have about this, is that when there is a betrayal along this between, if it's a husband and wife, there's going to be significant repercussions with respect to the emotions surrounding that, on the both on the person that's betraying, on the person that feels betrayed. It'll run deep, and it'll run not just in the immediate family, but extended family as they get involved in it. The emotions run very hard. In Psalms 32, 3 through 4. Now this is not from Proverbs itself, but it is recording King David's attitude after his anguish, surrounding his anguish, after what he felt in dealing with this and his sin with Bathsheba. It says, "When I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all the day long. For the day and the night, your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer." David had a very strong connection with God. We know from a youth, God enabled him to do things that other young men could not do. The ability to fight off the bear and the lion and to kill Goliath. Those were all manifested by God. David regularly prayed to God, and we have records of those. We see him behaving on behalf of God and his kingdom, which was ultimately he was anointed to lead. And we see here the separation that he felt and the anguish that he felt during this period of time. When we know that we have done something wrong, it pulls at us. It tears at us. If we're dealing with someone that we know is in sin, it pulls at us and tears at us because we're concerned about their soul. There's no doubt here that it damages the emotions and affects the people involved and affects the people around it. I'm going to back up one comment here. As it relates to damaging emotions and so on, we are fortunate to have good leaders within our congregation, our elders, and men of wisdom that have been in the congregation for many years. They have had to see this and to deal with it, and to work with people on it. And for any individual that finds themselves in a situation, they're a tool to leverage. They're here to help and guide. But I can tell you right now, it's going to be hard on their emotions too, because they're caring for the soul of the individual involved. Fornication damages marriages. As we look at the emotions surrounding it, there's resentment. We've already alluded to the idea of betrayal and the hurt that can be coming from that. There's an issue of trust that is hindered. If we're working with a child and, you know, they're habitually doing something that is wrong, we lose the ability to believe and trust in them that they'll actually do the right thing. If we have a spouse that we have had extreme trust with for an extended period of time and find out either as a one-time instance or a pattern of life that they've been lying to us, will you not find it difficult to trust that individual? I think if we all ask ourselves honestly, we'd say absolutely, we'd find a hard time trusting. And that's probably from the standpoint of how it damages marriages is one of the hardest things to work back through if two individuals are trying to get past this. It's going back and starting over and finding the thing that actually drew those people together, hopefully a core of being God-centric to work from. It is going to cause emotional pain. It's going to be painful, very much like what David described here in the loss of his vitality. If I were to ask individuals in the group tonight if you knew someone that suffered from a depression at some point in time, whether it be, you know, treatable or whether it be postpartum or some other type of depression, depression runs deep when it comes to situations surrounding sexual immorality in marriage. It is an emotional pain. it is crippling in many cases. It creates poor living standards. When you look at a house united is now divided and you're trying to provide two households at once. Single parent families now trying to raise their children. It creates issues that trickle down, not just to the ones involved that are older, but to the children and the grandchildren associated with it. Fornication itself is not gratifying. Whoa, that goes contrary to what everybody says. You know, everybody in the world, I mean. You know, it's popular, it's trendy, it's this or that. But fornication itself is not gratifying. It says here in Hebrews 11, 24 and 25, by faith Moses, when he was grown, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated by the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. And we're not told here what sin in particular they may have been involved in Egypt. But I would speculate that as the prince in that kingdom, he would have had the choice of wives. He would have had the choice of prostitutes. He would have had the choice of whatever he wanted to satisfy his pleasures. But we see that Moses himself chose to actually be a leader of his people. Hebrews 13 and 4. Let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous. It's not gratifying from the standpoint of how it's going to affect us long term. The long term impacts in the physical world here, no doubt, can be associated with family and friends, spouse, whoever it may be. But here, it's going to be the association with God that's going to be much, much longer term. Proverbs 5, 15, and 20. This is a passage I'm going to ask somebody to turn to and read, because it's several verses, and I don't have the voice to finish out this one. So I'll take first comer. I think this is a very important passage here as it relates to the idea of gratification, because it talks to the idea of being satisfied. When we talk to a well of water that is sweet, we want that well. We want to be satisfied by it. And this is making that idea. Does anybody have that passage? Doug?
Drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well.
This passage, at several levels, starts out from the standpoint of drinking waters of your own cistern. In that day, they would have had cisterns in their homes to be able to collect rainwater, to collect water so that they could have it to drink. And he's making the point here, you don't go steal water from somebody else's cistern or they'll go thirsty. You're participating in what is rightfully yours. So that's the idea here. You use your own will. You don't dip water out of somebody else's will. Then it turns around and makes the point, you don't go spreading things yourself in the next verse. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad and rivers of water in the streets. Let them be only thine and not strangers with thee. You reserve those for yourself. Makes the point here in verse 18, and this is quite poignant as it relates to the marriage relationship. Let thy fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. We all age. We all change. But here the passage is that we're to rejoice in the wife of our youth. One of the things there is that we have shared activities that we can always look to and be happy about, whether it be the birth of our first child or the seeing our children given away in marriage or some other activity that we share jointly. And here it makes the point, rejoice in those things. Verse 19, it makes the point here that marriage is a relationship for husband and wives to enjoy. And one that can be cherished, and one that can be pure, and one that can be wholesome. And not to pervert it by, in the following verses, turning and chasing after some other sexually immoral approach to try and satisfy one's needs. Lust itself often leads to fornication. In Proverbs 6:25, do not lust after her beauty in your heart. What was the thing that drew David to Bathsheba? She was very beautiful. He observed her in the process of her bathing and observed that she was very beautiful. Now, in that particular instance, we're not told that, well, he watched her lots of times and noticed her. It was one time. Here it makes the point about lust leading to fornication. An idea here of abstaining from pornography. Pornography in its basic form is to incite or instill lust. Its purpose is to entice lust. Sexual foreplay is intended for marriage. So for those that are not married and are dating, the idea here of petting or other activities there are reserved for the marriage relationship. The purpose of it is to entice lust or entice excitement between a husband and a wife. In Proverbs 5:18-19, let your fountain be blessed. Here it talks about being satisfied with the bosoms of the one's spouse and to be intoxicated always with one spouse's love. And we talk about different things, but that in its basis form is very, very pure. There's nothing to be ashamed of. Activities that provide opportunities for lasciviousness. And in the book that I've been using as a reference, it makes the point here, the first thing it dives into is dancing. But I think in today's society, we can see many more things that fit into a category of activities that our children, our grandchildren, and so on can be involved in, or we can be involved in, that just provide opportunities for lasciviousness. Lasciviousness is the excitement of lust and stirring up passions. It could be dancing. It could be going to an environment where you're in mixed swimming, or in today's society with the prevalence of same-sex relationships, it could just be where you're presenting yourself in a way that someone else is looking at you or you're looking at them. Water parks, workout venues, areas where you find yourself or someone else finds themselves dressed in a way that can be somewhat provocative. Unfortunately, that can be the workplace today. Of course, we all have to work to make a living. But in some cases, the attire that people present themselves in is not wholesome. How we are dressed and what are we thinking? Those are the things that go into the decisions surrounding where are these opportunities for lasciviousness. Is it a party that we're going to? As a young person going to a party, a college level age party or something, or a high school party, what are we thinking? How are we dressed? And what is the other person that's sitting across from us thinking about us? Drinking is one of the things that tends to lead to fornication. and mainly because it inhibits one's sensibilities. Often when we remove our inhibitions, we tend to do things and say things that we shouldn't. I have a problem when I'm tired, I lose my filter function. I tell my kids and I say things I probably shouldn't say. Sometimes that's bad jokes, dumb jokes. And some things it's, I probably would filter it more carefully and be a bit more polite about it if I wasn't nearly as tired. But here, drinking does that to people. It removes their inhibitions in a way that frees up their tongue, frees up their behavior. If we considered King David's attempt to encourage Uriah, what did he entice him with when he was trying to get him to go in and be with his wife so he could try to hide his own sin? Alcohol, get him drunk. Did it work in the case of Uriah? No. Right.
That's one of their effects.
Very, very, very true. And which passage was that? 23:33. Let thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thy heart shall utter perverse things. Okay. Also here, avoiding drugs that lower our inhibitions. You know, certainly, with the prevalence today of marijuana legalized in many states, people, teens, whoever, find it, it's legal now, I can do what I want to. It's one of those things that lowers inhibitions. Odd thing here is related to this particular topic and the prevalence of legalized marijuana. The FBI is finding it hard to hire people that can pass a drug test and are now relaxing standards so that if you pop positive for pot, they can still pass you. That's a sad state of society, to have leaders or potential leaders that are their inhibitions compromised. Conclusion. 2 Thessalonians 3:3. But the Lord is faithful, who shall establish you and keep you from evil. If we want to be free from sexual immorality, who do we depend upon? On God. And there's another passage that goes with that. 1 Corinthians 10:13. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. And this certainly falls into that category. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. What could David have done differently? Okay. Verse 12, therefore let him that thinketh he stand take heed lest he fall. Are you ever going to be able to completely prevent yourself from seeing something that you shouldn't? Now you can go to Walmart and run into things that you see that you shouldn't, but does that mean that you just keep looking? That's the difference between a glance and a stare. Our conclusion here is that God will be with us and he'll help us, but we have to take advantage of that help. He has helped us by preparing us in advance that we're going to be tempted. He's told us we're going to be tempted. But with those temptations, we can overcome them. And it may not seem that way sometimes. We may see a family member falter to temptation and never return. But this passage here, telling us that there's still always hope And in some cases, it may not be for that person, but it, their falling away may be a temptation to us. We need to rely on this as well. Thoughts and comments on tonight's topic? Brent? Absolutely. You know, 1 Corinthians, flee from fornication, and the instance, obviously, of Joseph being tempted by Potiphar's wife, him fleeing her. That's correct. He suffered immense punishment within his own family. No doubt, I believe that Absalom's uprising against him was a direct function of that. The other issues surrounding his sons would no doubt have been a result of that. That's a pretty heavy price to pay. But it's that tough part when you're caught in the moment and you need to make that decision. What do you, it's stop and think. Think about the consequences. Think about the biblical examples and the other things surrounding it, as opposed to, well, I'll just go this much further. And it's a trap. As a young person, I can see that trap. I participated in activities that were not wholesome. And passed it off from the standpoint of, well, it doesn't bother the other person. My logic was flawed. It bothered them, it bothered me, and it bothered God. Other thoughts and comments? I know it's an awkward topic. It is one that's biblical. The contrast to this is, you know, as it relates to this sexual immorality is the beauty presented in the Song of Solomon. And if you wanted to counter the lesson from that, read the Song of Solomon and how we are to view our spouse and how we're to view the person that we ultimately want to live with and be with. Jared. That's true. It's we don't use it in normal language.
We need to use terminology appropriate for the audience.
Yeah.
If that's true for 17- and 18-year-olds, lasciviousness, then you might as well be speaking some foreign language.
Okay. Agreed. It's the exciting of passions. It's getting hot and heavy. We'll put it in terms that they'll recognize and can work with. So, but yes, being blunt is the absolute way to handle it. Any other comments before we dismiss? Seven, 6-10. For at the window of my house I looked through my casement, and behold, among the simple ones I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house, nor is she without now in the streets, and lieth in wait in every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offerings with me this day. Have I paid my vows? Therefore come I forth to thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. And I have decked my bed with the coverings of tapestry, with the carved works and with the fine linen of Egypt. And I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning, and let us solace ourselves with loves. And it goes on to say, they're going to participate in this because the good man of the house is not there. Be careful where we're at. Be careful who we associate with. And be careful what we give occasion to. Thank you.